Shilat bat Luza Aliza, Daniel ben Luza Aliza, and Yosef Luza. Oh, really? The first when I first started, oh, it's the Aliza. I'll say then Shilat bat Aliza Luza, Daniel ben Aliza Luza, and Yosef ben Ahuva Masuda. Talking about the month of Shvat. Obviously, everyone kind of sees the month of Shvat basically summed up in the Chag of Tu B'Shvat. And Tu B'Shvat means different things to different people. Originally, way back when, in the time of the Gemara, and Tenuante, who's more halacha oriented, Tu B'Shvat was simply a very technical way. It was actually the starting point of calculating the age of trees. So much so that if you planted a tree on Yud Dalet Shvat, the next day on Tesvav, it became a year old already. And it was, of course, for the purpose of being able to know when to take Meiser. So it's sort of a very technical chag. Years later, the Kabbalists, specifically the Arizal, said that Tu B'Shvat was an attempt to extricate that spiritual spark, which is inherent in any physical thing created, in order to increase Hashem's presence in the world. Go a few thousand years later than that, and you have the modern Zionist who looked at Tu B'Shvat as an opportunity to restore the ecology of the land of Israel, also looked at it as a symbol of growth or rebirth of the Jewish nation in its homeland, and even became a very important source of fundraising, the JNF, right? You care about Israel? Plant a tree. For a young, struggling country, it was very, very necessary. A couple years later, the environmentalist looks at Tu B'Shvat as the authentic Jewish Earth Day. Not to minimize it, as a reminder to us that we have a responsibility to use everything in this world responsibly. For some people, Tu B'Shvat is just another occasion to celebrate, have good friends, a lot of wine, right? But I know us women, particularly in this room, I mean any women, we view Tu B'Shvat as something deeper, something much more existential. And that is, it's a time to have that Seder without all the cleaning, right? But that being the case, the month of Shvat has another message to it that I hope to flush out with you today. I want to start with a question that you've been asked before and you've heard answers to before, but hey, why not rehash? What is the first mitzvah given in the Torah? Don't be scared, I made my bracha already. What? Rosh Chodesh. Is that only because you're trying to connect to this week's parsha, or you firmly stand behind Rosh Chodesh? Anyone have another opinion as to Rosh Chodesh, something that predates even Rosh Chodesh? Purvu. So you skip past Avram's Brit Milah, past Sheva Mitzvah B'nai Noach, and you went all the way to the beginning. Purvu. And what? Don't eat from the tree. Eat from the tree. Don't eat. Eat. Which one is it? So man has a... Okay. So you see, we've had from the very beginning a close association with trees. According to you, the first mitzvah given involved a tree. The first job of man, right? If you look at the first source on our page, the one that says Shvat, a time to grow. The first job of man was to, he was put in the garden, La'avda u'lishamra, to work it and guard it, right? So the question is, what did working really mean if everything was already planted? Was it just maintenance? What does that mean, to work in? And guarding maybe is the maintenance part, guard and make sure they're growing okay and whatever. But, you know, what was he working? And what was he guarding it from, or who was he guarding it from? Right? Everyone seemed to be pretty okay with that garden. No one was ripping it up and, you know, plowing through it. So what exactly was that job? But we find other, again, references to us and trees. First thing that Noah does after the world is destroyed is he plants, right? Second source, right? Noah began to be a master of the So'isha Adama Vayitakar, he plants a vineyard. Probably though the most, when the Jews are told to enter Israel, one of the first things they're told to do is to plant. But one of the most obvious references or comparisons to man and trees in the Torah is a pasuk, quite a well-known pasuk in Parshat Shoftim, Sefer Devarim. It's also on your page. That says that when kitator el ir yamim rabim, when you siege around a city for a long time, you want to make war against it, to conquer it. Lo tashrit et etza, do not destroy her, the city's trees. Don't, you know, put any kind of iron axe against it. Ki hadam etz hasadeh, man is the tree of the field. What does that mean, man is the tree of the field? I mean, depending on body type, some people may look more like trees than others, but what does that mean? The Torah says man is the tree of the field. And what is this whole association with trees that we have going even way, you know, from the beginning? it's interesting also that the Chazal equate trees with people in another way. Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the following source on your page from chapter 34 says, six voices go from one end of the world to another and they're not heard. And one of them, when a fruit-bearing tree, I'm reading from the source, is cut down, the voice cries out from one end of the world to another and no one hears. Kind of reminds you of that other philosophical debate, right? What am I thinking of? When the tree falls apart and no one is around, does it make a sound? That's not the one I'm thinking of. No. Oh, I remember. No, the other philosophical debate that's gone on for centuries, even more than that one, is when a man says something and a woman's not around, is he still wrong? That's what I'm thinking of. You never had that debate? We can have it during brunch. Similarly, says Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, when the soul departs from a body, its voice goes out from one end. You're going to use that today, aren't you? You are. From one end of the world to another, and no one hears. Anyone know of the four other things about which Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says that the voice goes from one end of the earth to another, and no one hears? Anyone know? Ever heard of this? I'll keep you in suspense, so I guarantee you stay for the whole class. What?
A
voice or a light? Voice. Voice. Talking about voices. Six voices go from one end of the world to the other. Light, you're right. There are a couple of things about light. No? Not according to Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. That does make into the top six, into the six, but it could be a different source. So what does this mean exactly? We're equating a soul going out of body to a tree being cut down. What is this whole association that we have with trees? And it's interesting, even going to another source, many times when you see references in the Torah about life, establishing life, you'll see reference to planting. For example, as it says in Sefer Kohelet, written by Shlomo Melech at the end of his days, towards the end of his days, chapter 3, one of the more famous chapters in Kohelet, right? For everything there's a time, there's a moment for everything under the sun, right? Made more famous by one of those bands, right? I don't know, monkeys, beetles, eagles, some animal name, right? They made a song, right? A time to be born, a time. Really? It wasn't a monkey, an eagle, or a beetle, or an ant, or someone? Okay, we have a little debate here, but we'll leave that also for during the brunch today. Really? Okay, I don't know if there was one. Anyway, huh? Okay. I was a little before my time, so I don't know, but I trust your opinions. It was one of them that made up the song, right? But interestingly, Shlomo Melech says there's a time to be born, right? A time to be born, a time to die. Now, interestingly, don't look at the source if you already did too late. What would you think he'd follow that up with? I mean, that's pretty significant. A time to be born, a time to die. You might pick some of the other things he says later on, a time of war, a time of peace, a time to kill, a time to let live. No, he follows that up with a time to plant and a time to uproot planting. Why? What is the message that he's talking about? Time to live, a time to die, a time to plant and uproot planting. What does that mean?
A time to live in between birth and death.
Okay, and what is that going to do with plant life? Growing. Now we have the birds. Okay, eagles, birds, beetles, I don't know, whatever it is. We have a big debate going on here. This is one of the biggest debates at the OU Center ever. Yes?
They both come from a seed.
Interesting. For example, so you're saying, okay, good, got it. You know, interestingly, when we all did that experiment, I think most of us, if not our children do it, and in science, you know, you take the seed, you put it into soil, you got to give it water and light, right? Anyone here gardening? Into gardening? The seed, well, it does have to do with the seed rotting. I want to ask, if you've ever done that, or if you plant, whatever, did you ever cry when the seed went into the ground? Did you ever find yourself crying, being very depressed? Why not? It's dying. Because you know that something better is coming out. Similarly, you know, death, the whole concept of death, and the fact that we know one thing, we don't do anything, but we know all of us here in this room are going to die at one point. Hopefully I'd made a best friend, but, right? That knowledge should incapacitate us. How do we get up in the morning knowing? How do we go through our day knowing we're going to die? You know why? Because deep down inside, you know there's something better. You know there's something better coming on the other side, right? So it's interesting how we celebrate birth, we don't celebrate death. But really, when you think about it, it's really, there's something better coming, much better. We have it sometimes a little mixed up, you know? But again, what are we talking about here with the reference to plant and life and man and what's going on here? It's interesting that the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Samech Gimel says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Kol Adam She'en Lo, well, that's the first one, I put it the opposite, Adam, Kol Adam She'en Lo Karka Eino Adam. Any man who has no, let's go to the second one, has no land is not a proper man. Yes? It's a good question. I'm going to put that on the side for a minute, and at the end, when you have a few minutes, you can bring that up, okay? A man who has no land is not a man, not a proper man. Kind of comes from that same, or the idea comes from this, that that saying that a nation without land is not a nation, right? Was that Arnold Toynbee? Or I'm not going to ask because we're going to get into another debate about who said it. But a nation without land is one of the prerequisites of being a nation. You can't exist as a nation. I know you're going to object and say, what? We the people know better than that. We hadn't had our land for so long. But we don't fit into these like general philosophical statements, you know. We are above nature, as we know. So yeah, the Jewish people have existed for a long time without our land. But when you think about it, way in the beginning, we had this message brought down to us. You need a land to be a nation. Avraham was told by Hashem, in order for you to be the goy that I want to make you be, you have to lech lecha. You got to get out of that land that you're in right now, the land of your forefathers and your family and your familiarity. You got to get out. Because in order to be the kind of nation I want you to be, you need the proper soil. You need the kind of land that'll help you plant yourself and grow the way you're supposed to be. You know, in Chutz Laretz, you grow up in America, so you're an American. Canada, England, Canadian, England, right? In Eretz Yisrael, you grow up, you're a Jew. That's what you are. And that's what Hashem is telling Avram. You need a different kind of land to make you be the person you're supposed to grow to be. It's very important where you plant yourself. And we know that the land, that we affect the land, even more than the land affects us. We know that throughout the years of Galus and Chorban, the land didn't grow. I recently read another scientific research paper about how in what a terrible shape the land of Israel was in before the Jews came back to it. It didn't grow. Nothing was, it was barren. It was a wasteland. Because the land can't really grow. Just like we're dependent on the land to grow, the land is dependent on us to grow. Our land, this land. Shema Yisrael tells us as well, if you act the way you're supposed to act, your crops will come, your rain will come, your things will grow. And if you don't, not going to happen. It's a very inherent connection. It's unfortunate that we're not an agricultural society today. So much of this is lost on us. You remember the first time you take your child to a kibbutz or a farm or whatever? They're shocked. Milk comes from a sheep or a cow? I thought it comes from a carton or a bag. In the grocery store, it actually comes. We're not like really connected so much to land and growth and trees and what they really mean. The Torah tries with all these, you know, statements and connections, but we it's lost on us a little bit. What are we talking about here? What is the significance here? The Gemara has other statements. It makes very powerful statements. Gemara in Sukkah, not on your page. I had to keep some a little bit, you know, just. Gemara in Sukkah says that if a person cuts down a fruit tree, or it doesn't actually, it just says cuts down a tree, a healthy tree, they will not see bracha forever. Yeah, Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Chavtes. You cut down a healthy tree, you don't see bracha forever. No, that's not the one. I'm going to get to the fruit one. That, it just says tree. The Gemara that I gave you on the source in Bava Kama says, actually, it's actually a bracha in Yuma, Gemara in Yuma on Daf Chaf, but I gave you the one that Rav Chinya proves it. The Gemara in Yuma on Daf Chaf says you cut down a fruit tree, there's a danger of children dying, of yours, husband, children. Yeah, that's the Gemara. One second, just questions a little bit. Let's get a little more. We're just kind of, getting into a little bit. And the Gemara of Avakama says, or Chaimia said, that his son died only because he had once cut down a fig tree before its time. These are very powerful statements. Scary, powerful. What is the connection here? What are we talking about? What does it got to do with Tu B'Shvat? Why do we celebrate it? What's going on here? So one of the answers, if you want to say, to this, from the Sifri, and by the way, the Sifri looks at this statement about cutting down trees as both an ase and a lotase. So you're over on it, you got both, an ase and a lotase. And the reason the Sifri gives as to why this is, and I hope they didn't guarantee you a money back, give you a money back guarantee, because it's so simple that you might think, well, that's it? We'll go on and we'll add to it. The Sifri says, why is this so? He says, the shorish of the mitzvah, the root of this mitzvah, I'm not cutting down the tree, kidei lilamed nafshenu lehov hadurim shiyesh bahem tov v'toelet. Can you imagine? This whole thing about not cutting down trees and no bracha and chasrom children and all this is so that we teach our souls to appreciate that which produces good and has benefit. It's too simple. There must be more, right? You go on, he just elaborates. Mitoch kach tidabek banu hatova. And from this, good will be glued, will be connected, will be entrenched in us. V'netrachek mikol hashchata. And we will try very hard to distance ourselves from any kind of destruction. V'zeu derech hachasidim v'anshei ma'aseh. This is the way of the chasidim, those who are very pious, and people who are anshei ma'aseh, people who make a difference in the world. Ohavim hashalom v'smechim b'tov habriyot. They love peace. They are happy when human beings have it good. And mekarvam altan l'Torah, and they bring them close to the Torah, which is the ultimate good, the ultimate tree, right? Eitz Chaim hi. V'lo yovdu afilu gerger shel chardal b'olam. They won't even waste a mustard seed. Reminiscent of Yaakov, right, who goes back for those pachim. What are those pachim? We don't know if they were containers, something used in his kitchen, but he won't leave them on the other side. Because a tzaddik doesn't want to see any kind of waste or destruction. And they'll do everything possible to save something from destruction, as the Sifri says. If they have the ability, they will save anything from destruction. Not so by a Rasha. Shehem achim shel mazikim. They are the brothers of mazikim. You know what mazikim are? We discussed this in our Tuesday morning class from 10:30 to 11:30 at the OU Center, but I mentioned that 8 times in my Hanukkah drasha, and if you didn't come then, you're not coming now. But mazikim are evil forces in the world that very, very dangerous to even talk about them. And the Misham are their brothers. Smechim hem behashkatat olam vehem mashchitim atzmam. They love destruction in the world, and they destroy themselves. If you ever wonder, and we all have these contemplative moments where we wonder, who am I? Am I a tzaddik? Am I from Russia? How do you know? You know how you know if you're Russia? Can't tell you right now, tzaddik. We talked about it a little bit last 2 months ago in the Hanukkah Drasha, but you know how you know if you're Russia? Simple. Simple. Don't listen to the in-laws tell you if you are or not. Daughters or mothers or no. That's not the way. The way you know if you're Russia is simple. If you stop looking at the good in things and you look at the bad, that's how you know you're Russia. That's how a person destroys himself. Our core is to see good and to do good. You destroy yourself by looking for the bad, seeking out bad, and not looking for the good. That's how you know. That's the litmus test. You destroy yourself by looking at only the bad and not the good. And that's what Sifri says. That's why we have this appreciation for trees and that which grows. It's supposed to remind us, you're supposed to look for the good. You're supposed to look for that which creates and not destroys. That which builds and not that which breaks down. It's sometimes hard to tell the difference. between that which destroys and that which builds. I gave this lecture, I haven't given this lecture in a while. When I first did, I had the screw that I took with me, a nice size screw. And I passed around, it was a much smaller group, and I asked everyone, tell me what that was and what is it used for. And it was like a nice size screw, so people said, well, it must have been used to build a baby carriage or a wagon or whatever. Everyone, you know, touched it and gave their opinion what it was. I said, actually, that was not what that screw was from. It wasn't from a baby carriage, it wasn't from a wagon, it wasn't from, not a table, someone said. Or I said, I've been walking a few years back on Rehov HaNeviim, and all of a sudden, a bunch of people are like running towards me. I thought they were to greet me. I didn't know who they were. And they're running toward and then past me. I didn't know why, but I continue walking. And then I come to the scene from which they were running from. A mechabel had blown himself up. There were a few casualties, some wounded. I don't know why, but I looked on the ground. It was only a minute or two later from when he had done it. And I saw the screw. Yeah. I've since lost it. I don't know what made me go in the first place. And it was still warm and stuff on it. I don't know. I washed it before I gave it out to people in class. I don't know what that was. I picked it up with a paper. Don't worry. I said, screws are meant to build with, and sometimes they are used to destroy with, and sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. But that's what we're told to do in life. We're told to seek out the good, appreciate that which builds and which grows and which is good and not the bad. And according to the Sifri, that's the root of the mitzvah, not cutting down trees. That's the root of who we are. That's our root. And like I said, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes the destruction itself is good. Sometimes the challenge itself can be good. You know, like my children come over to me sometimes and say, Mommy, my legs hurt. And I say, oh, did you fall? Did you bang? No. And they're already used to it by now. And so all of a sudden they come back, oh, Mommy, it's growing pains, right? I'm like, yeah. So my oldest son, he's one of the questions that stump you. At one point, he was only, I think, 7. He said, Mommy, why do we have to have pain to grow? Why does Hashem have to make it hurt? Why can't we just grow? And at 7, it was hard to go into it. But I said, you know, sometimes, it's interesting because I didn't quote this Gemaratim, this Chazaltim, but, and I see I didn't even give it to you on the page, did I? There is a Chazal that says that every blade of grass and tree has an angel behind it that hits it and says, grow. Now, why can't you pat it on the back and say, hey, grow, honey? Why do you have to hit it? Because sometimes we don't grow unless we're hit. The hit can be a good thing. You win the lotto, that's a hit. Oh, I'm being serious, actually. I didn't think of that as a funny one. How are you going to use the money? Are you going to use it for yourself? Are you going to become haughty and mean to people and stingy? That can be a nice hit. Open a gemach, so that's right. But sometimes the hit is the good thing. It helps you grow. And obviously things in nature seem to need a hit. And if they need a hit, we probably need it as much, if not more, to grow, to look for that good, to recognize it and appreciate it. But again, what is this whole connection to us and the trees and to Bishvat? So going back to that first, was it the first source? No, the source that I gave you. Adam's first job, because you know it all goes back to them. Everyone figured out it all goes back to them. Adam was told or put into the garden to watch it, to work it, I'm sorry, and to guard it, to watch it, right? According to the Medrash, we asked before, what is he watching and guarding and working? What is he doing? The Medrash says that La'avdo u'lishamro refers to the mitzvah taseh, La'avdo, to work it, the mitzvah taseh. And La'shamro, from Shamor, are the mitzvot lo taseh. Adam was put in the garden to keep the mitzvot. And his first mitzvah is an aseh and a lo taseh. You're both right. The first, was really the first mitzvah, no offense, she edged him out by like a second. Meaning as far as, it's the same pasuk, it says, yes, yes. So he's told, exactly. Hashem says, I put you into the garden to eat from every tree. It says, Vayitzav, if you look in the Torah, I didn't give you the source. It says, Vayitzav Hashem et ha'adam. Hashem commands, first mitzvah ever. It's before Peruvu, by the way. Hashem commands Adam to eat of every tree in the garden. Enjoy my world, says Hashem, but not just enjoy it. No, it's not about pleasure. It's not just about pleasure. Hashem created the world for one purpose, which we also discussed in our Ramchal class. It's for us to receive goodness in general and His goodness in particular. Let me continue. You have questions. I will lean in to leave some questions. Brunch is afterwards, so you can stay and ask questions if you want. How do we experience His goodness? By bonding with Him, by connecting with Him. How do we connect with Him? By serving Him with His sake in mind. Meaning, we serve Him by acknowledging that what He gives us is a gift. And when we accept that gift, that's when we can say we're actually serving Him by bonding with Him. Accepting the gift willfully, that's how we bond with Him. Can you imagine accepting a gift? That's how you bond with someone. You know, I'm taking this course by Rebbetzin Spetner, very big name in parenting and education and many other things. And we were talking about manners and derech eretz, you know, and children and people and whatever. And she asked us, what is the biggest sign of a lack of hakaras hatov? I ask you, what is the biggest sign of a lack of hakaras hatov? Who? Depression. I can hear that's a sign of lack of hakaras hatov. Huh? Haughtiness. Yeah. Chutzpah. Not saying thank you. Now, you're opening up a whole can of worms we had all lesson on. Not saying thank you, according to Rabbi Spetner, has nothing to do with hakaras hatov. Thank you is a language. It's a culture. In some places, thank you. Wait, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. It took us a whole lecture. Thank you is a word. It doesn't teach the hashkafa of hakaras hatov. It's a word. You can say thank you without meaning appreciation or thank at all. Thank you very much. That's not hakaras hatov. Thank you is a word that's been used in certain cultures. It could lead you to averus of onas devarim, of chil Hashem. But that's not hakaras hatov. But what is the greatest, you said, chutzpah, depression, or haughtiness. You know what she said is the greatest sign of a lack of hakaras hatov? Returning gifts that you get. I know, since I'm an expert at doing that. What? She said, yeah. I know. We all were. We gave it back. We said, what? You mean we know? Isn't this word? She said, no. When someone gives you, you know why? If someone gave you that gift, it was Hashem giving you that gift. He decided you needed it. Now you can say, but I have five others.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter if they're ever going to see it. Doesn't matter if they don't come. I'll return. They'll never know I returned it. They don't come to my house ever. Or they're leaving or whatever. She said, the returning of a gift is a lack of hakaras hatov. I know. We had to think about that for a while, but as usual, she was right. When you have a gift and you don't appreciate it and you give it back or just don't appreciate it, huge sign of lack of it. That's it. I'm going to wait for questions. When Hashem gives us a gift, and we either don't use it or reject it or use it for our own pleasure without acknowledging the bonding that it gives us with Hashem, that's a problem. And that's what we're being told to do. Adam and Chava were told, eat from my garden, not just, you know, gluttony. Eat from every tree and realize that I'm giving you this. Acknowledge the gift from me, and by acknowledging, that's how you bond with me. It's very simple. It was the easiest job ever. Can you imagine getting a job like that? I'll pay you money if you acknowledge I gave you a gift and just appreciate it. Who wouldn't want that job? You know, it's not about pleasure. There's having pleasure and there's receiving pleasure. Having pleasure means that you, let's say you have to have chocolate. Having chocolate means you don't care where it comes from or who it came from. You don't care about the source. You don't want to connect to the source. You want the chocolate. You want the pleasure. Receiving pleasure is much different. Receiving pleasure, you care about where it's coming from and how it came to you. The receiving of the pleasure is much different than having the pleasure. Hashem didn't put us into a garden or into a world to have pleasure. He said, I want you to receive the pleasure, realize who it's coming from, and acknowledge it's a gift from me to you. And that way, you'll bond with me, you'll connect with me. Interestingly, there are four other things that the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says, the voice goes out from one end of the earth to another, and no one hears. In whatever order you want to say, child leaving the womb. Woman, how should I say, losing her bitulot. First time she's intimate. Thanks. It's just that we're being recorded, so we have to be careful with whatever. A snake sloughing its skin, how do you say, losing its skin? Molting? Okay. Molting. Shedding. Okay, all those words. Okay. Divorce. Right, those are four others, and we said cutting down a tree and death. You notice a connection between all those things? Soul leaving, well, let's start with the child leaving the womb, snake losing its skin, not to compare, cutting down a tree, a divorce, death. They cannot be reversed. Those are things that you can never go back to the womb. You can never, the skin can never get its, the snake can never get its skin back. Can't come back after death. Questions in one moment, right? Those are all things, interestingly, those are all things that are represented by Gan Eden. Child, spiritually, it's a bigger problem. Even if they remarry, it's a bigger problem spiritually. Again, I'm not going to get into that, but these all reflect Gan Eden. Child leaving the womb was creation of the whole entire world and Adam and Chava. Snake shedding its skin, or I should say cutting a tree down first, Adam and Chava eating of the tree. Snake losing its skin, Nachash in Gan Eden. Divorce, the first ever divorce in world history, when they were, and it uses the same word, Vayigaresh Adam v'Chava mehagan, they were thrown out of the Gan Eden. And death, we became mortal. It all goes back to that. And what we're trying to do in Tu B'Shvat, even though those things seem to be irreversible, with Tu B'Shvat, we're trying to reverse them in a very simple way. We want to get back to Gan Eden. We want to get back to our immortality. We want to get back to bonding with Hashem. We want to get back to that tree. And in Tu B'Shvat, we do what we should have done originally. We take the fruit and we look at it as an incredible gift. Not just the pleasure from the taste, but look at the texture and the color and the fragrance and realize, look what Hashem gave me. That's incredible. And all I have to do is acknowledge and say, Hashem, you gave me a gift. Thank you, make a bracha, you're done. You did tikkun. That's what we're trying to do. Because if you can't do that, if you can't look at a fruit and see the gift in it, Chutzke Rebbe says, whoever doesn't see God everywhere doesn't see God anywhere. If you can't see Hashem in a fruit, in a fig, where do you see Hashem? You can't acknowledge that Hakar Satov, that bonding. It's more than Hakar Satov, it's a bonding. The Hakar Satov stops short, the bonding is the actual get together, right? If you can't do that with a fruit, how are you going to do that in life? And that's what we're trying to do with Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat says, you know, I called the lecture Time to Grow. What is growth? What does growth mean? You get taller, right? You branch out more, bigger, what? Older. What is growth? Growth is very simple. Growth is, you know, a child sees the chocolate, just a chocolate. Doesn't even recognize, sometimes doesn't even say thank you. Mommy was just the hand that gave me the chocolate. It's okay, they're a child. They'll learn. You get older, right? Wherever you get the money. You write a thank you card, not? Okay, they'll mature, right? They'll grow. Comes a point in life where you have to see the gift as a gift from Hashem. Stop ignoring it. Growth means you're able to see the world and every gift as a, and everything, I'm sorry, as a gift from Hashem. It's a Hashem consciousness that you have to have. And that's what we're working for in Tu B'Shvat. One day of the year, we remind ourselves of what it's really all about. It's that connection through the simplest thing, like a fruit, which is not so simple, because as you said, there's a lot embodied in trees and fruit, and we have a major connection to them. There's no coincidence that our first job and our first mitzvah and death and children, oh, they're all connected. Because if you can't see that, you know, another great quote There are two ways to view the world, or I'm sorry, there are two ways to live. You can live as if nothing is a miracle, or you can live as if everything is a miracle. Albert Einstein said that. Albert Einstein, about whom his colleagues said and faulted him for this, that he believed if you had enough information, you could figure God out. He said that. Because you really can't. But you can connect to him. You can take a fruit and realize this is such a gift. If you can do that with the fruit, how much more things we look at with that kind of Hashem consciousness and that kind of a feeling that this is a gift. Hopefully it's Tu B'Shvat when we eat those fruits, not exhausted because there was no cleaning at the Seder, we can acknowledge that and realize that in doing so, we bond with Hashem, and that's the whole point. The whole point of Tu B'Shvat, the whole point of life. It measures our growth. Tu B'Shvat, we look at ourselves, it's Rosh Hashanah for the trees, they become a year older. Have we gotten any older in the way we view things? Have we? Are we the same that we were a year ago when we took that same fruit and just said, Baruch Adonai Baruch Pirat, and didn't think about it? I'll stop now for questions. I will make one announcement first. Some of you know this. This is a book that I wrote on all the parshiot of the Torah, all 54, Bereishis through Devarim. It's in English. Things are quoted in Hebrew, translated just to make it look authentic. Every chapter has a summary of key points that you can give over at your table as a Devar Torah, in a class or a group, whatever it is. My goal in writing, when people ask, is just to show how every story, every event in the Torah is relevant to our lives today. The example I always use is that in Vayishlach, when Dina is assaulted, I show how that's relevant to our lives today. It has nothing to do with Sneas necessarily, but a more important lesson. In the bookstores, it's quite expensive, 110 shekel. Here, it's only 60. Currently, these are the last 9 copies I have before we go out of print, so be very exciting. If you want one, let me know. I'll stay here for questions for the book. There's brunch outside, I believe. Question. Alert, everyone.